All right, so my name is Gareth Jones, and I'm an API architect on the Microsoft Graph. I'm going to spend the next hour or so talking to you about how you can make awesome line of business applications with the Microsoft Graph. So what are we going to talk about in this session? So we're going to do a quick overview of the Microsoft Graph and look at what's new and what's available at the moment and what things we're announcing this week here at Ignite. We've got some great new stuff for you. And then we're going to spend the majority of the time looking at the graph from the point of view of building line of business applications and dive into some great code and demos. So, what is the Microsoft Graph? Well, if any of you went to the session yesterday with Rob and Tristan or have caught some of our other Office platform materials, you'll have seen this kind of taxonomy of where things fit together in the Office platform. And the Microsoft Graph, really, we tend to pitch in this cloud piece in the middle here. Sitting squarely there in building smarter apps by connecting to Office services. But really, to be honest, it's more pervasive than that. You know, if you think about building an add-in for Office and you've got something sitting there in the UI of Office, you're probably going to be talking to some back-end services and quite likely talking to those through the Microsoft Graph as well. Or if you're building some conversational application, it's entirely likely that you're going to be talking to some Microsoft Graph services through that. So really, the increasingly we find the Microsoft Graph is appearing all across the surface of our Office platform. And more broadly than just Office, across our entire Microsoft developer stack as we grow the surface of the Microsoft Graph. So what actually is the Microsoft Graph? So who here has, before this week, had heard of the Microsoft Graph? Oh my, most of you, okay. And who had actually written some code against the Microsoft Graph? Okay, so that's maybe about 15, 20%. All right, so that's a good leveling for me. So the cool thing about the Microsoft Graph, really, is that we're drawing all of the APIs for Microsoft's cloud services into a single API. And you'll see from this nice, pretty diagram here that our focus up until now has been on the productivity cloud services from Microsoft, things like pieces of Office. And we're gradually starting to expand that, and you'll see some of that later in my talk, as we broaden this out to span more of Microsoft's cloud services. But that single API, obviously you would think about an API for accessing data, whether that's accessing my data, my profile, going and grabbing some groups out of Exchange or Active Directory, or grabbing some email with some messages. But that would just really be the Microsoft API, right? Not the Microsoft Graph, just grabbing the data. So really, the thing which links it together and turns it into a graph is the fact that you can traverse these links between the data. So I can go and hop across here. So for example, I've got a fraction of a URL where I'm hopping from OneDrive. You see, I'm going and saying I'm getting a drive item. And then I'm diving across into Active Directory and saying, hey, get me some information about the user who last modified that file. So I'm joining across there and making a true graph. And then the third thing about the graph is that we're allowing you to go and get rich data. So we're running a lot of machine learning at Microsoft now and trying to give you that information that we find about your data back to you so you can make your own applications more rich. Also, our applications that we build for you as part of our SaaS offerings are much richer for your end users. So we might go and, rather than you just having to access a specific document, you might go and find all of the documents that are trending around the users that you work with to get a feed of those documents. And then finally, we bring all of that together under an umbrella, whether you're working with work and school users or personal users, under that same single URI, the Microsoft Graph, graph.microsoft.com. So before we had the Microsoft Graph, what did things look like? You know, is this really so revolutionary to have this single API? Well, we obviously had a bunch of these cloud services, and many of them historically had APIs, depends how old the cloud service was. But they tended to look a little bit like silos. And they'd been developed independently, obviously. And certainly, some of them were different depending on whether you were logging in with a work or school account or a personal account. You know, historically, OneDrive for business and OneDrive were separate services, and gradually we've been bringing them together over the years, and now they're just one consistent service. And so that's what it tended to look like. You know, you had these lumps, and you had separate auth stacks for accessing them, depending which side of the business you were coming in from, personal or work and school. And now we pull all of that together into this consolidated API surface. And that really makes a huge difference, as you'll see in a second, from a learning point of view particularly. So when I'm actually saying, hey, I've got my application connected to one Microsoft cloud service, then the incremental cost to go and connect to another one, my boss says to me, hey, well, yeah, you did that integration with Outlook, but can you now go and integrate with OneDrive? That used to be, hey, I'll go and learn the next API from Microsoft, and I'll go and learn how to do the auth for that. And now it's really a much, much more fractional cost because it's all just under the same API surface with the same style of documentation and the same style of APIs, as we'll see. So to make that more concrete, here's some examples of what the APIs used to look like pre-Microsoft Graph. And you can see I've just obviously got the URLs up here, not the response packets from the APIs. But even the URLs, there was an awful lot of diversity among those, whether they were personal or work APIs. But the API shapes themselves were very different. And you can imagine the response packets from these tended to be really quite different from each other. And that's just a natural consequence of the evolution of the service being built at different times by different teams. So that job of bringing them together under the Microsoft Graph involved pulling them together into a consistent API service and URL service, which you can see here, and also taking those response packets and standardizing them and bringing those together and making them easy to learn so your skills are transferable when you've done one integration onto the next. And that's really a super key point here. Again, I want to repeat it, that your skills become transferable from one Microsoft Cloud service to the next. And also that because you've now only got one auth stack across all of these services, you're making far fewer round trips to go and do auth, because previously you had to go and swap tokens between services when you wanted to move from one service to another. But now you're just on one service, so there's none of that in there, and that can really add some extra perf into your application. So you can see we've got a very consistent surface here, whether I'm just driving in to get my mail with me messages, or then going in to get my files with me drive route children. And it's all just become something that's organized and very easy to learn with just an incremental amount of work to go and find out about the new URLs. So let's actually make that real in terms of what you can do with the Microsoft Graph. Flip over to my demo machine. So here we've got an application that we like to keep building on incrementally. It's kind of one we're building out forever with the Microsoft Graph, the Contoso property management application. And this is a scenario that we build where a company, Contoso, is renting out properties, or rather managing property rentals on behalf of their clients. And they have people who are going out and doing inspections on properties, and then they're sending out repairmen when something goes wrong, whether that's a leaky faucet or a broken window or whatever it might be. And you've got a dispatcher who's sitting at the center of all this, taking in the reports from the inspections and sending out repair people. And it's a great way for us to pull together all the information and power it by the Microsoft Graph and show just the kind of richness that can be achieved, and to keep adding more richness as we add more to the graph. And it's kind of overflowing now with stuff as we add more. So let's go in and have a look through some of the things that we're powering here from the graph. So if I go down the left-hand side here, the first thing you see is I've gone and pulled together an Office 365 group for all of the people who work on this particular property. This is the Our Residence. And you can see I'm sitting here, Gareth Jones, as the guy who's playing the dispatcher in this case. And then I've got a bunch of people. I've got Rob, who's going to go and run the inspections. And I can just go and get these rich cards and pull information about the people. So then what else have I got? I've got some conversations going on. So this is my conversation as a platform from Outlook. So I can go and see the inspection that went on and pull that down from the conversations that are going on inside that modern group. And it's just going to take me straight through to the group. Or I can go and see the OneNote notes for each inspection. Again, pull down from the graph. And that combination of going and using the API to pull the actual data through the API, and then getting the web links to power the URIs that are going to actually let me go through in my own UI and give me a nice click-through experience is really nice. And then I can again go through to the email, it being exchanged by the property owner, and then drill into some of the files. So this is a file where we're managing the property costs in Excel, and you can see I've got a bunch of nice stuff there running in Excel. And I can go and pull the thumbnail out of the file using the OneDrive APIs exposed on the Microsoft Graph, and I've got that thumbnail with the primary image out of the file. And looking at it just as a simple file, that's the thumbnail. But it's an Excel file, so I can do much better than that. So if I go back up to the top here, you can see that I've actually dived into this file using the fact that Excel is exposed on the Microsoft Graph as a rich service for me to go and actually go and do either data analysis or to pull out information and analytics. So I'm going in here, and if you take a look at my inspections cost, you can see that I've got graphs and I've got worksheets powering those graphs. And I can go and get that raw data directly into my application straight through the API. So I've gone and pulled in the summaries of those tables. And then I've also gone and pulled in the graphs that are driving those. So really deep integration directly with my data here. Okay, so that's the kind of richness that we've built, and we believe it's really easy for you with, and I hope you'll get from the session today, that with really not too much code, you can build these kind of rich experiences for your own line of business. So, oops. So what's new on the graph? Well, to set some context for that, let's talk about what's been around for the last year. So we launched the graph a little over a year ago now. And we've had all of these services, sort of core Microsoft Cloud services like Active Directory, Outlook, OneDrive available. And we've got now thousands of applications being built on them over that year. And you saw a bunch of those in that application. And we've recently added to that set that Excel API that I showed, and brought that into general availability. And then this week, we're super excited to be announcing that we're bringing it to general availability so you can go to production with webhooks for the OneDrive service, so you can go and subscribe to event changes on the root of your drives in OneDrive to add to the existing webhooks support we had for Outlook items. And then the ability to extend the graph with your own line of business data for Outlook items, so you can go and poke your data in, and I'll be showing some more examples of how to use that later. And then for any of you who saw my talk at Build last spring, then we demonstrated, well, Yina and I demonstrated the scheduling API that we added to the graph, the fine meeting times API, and we're bringing that to GA over the next week or so. And then preview, we're really excited. We've got a ton of stuff that we're announcing this week in preview on the graph. So who wants SharePoint on the graph? Yes. Super excited. SharePoint sites and lists on the graph in preview for the first down payment on getting the whole of SharePoint onto the graph. And then another super exciting area, hybrid. So we really want people to be able to build applications against the graph that really don't care where their customers' data is, that can just access it whether it's in the graph or whether the data is on-premise. Now, that's going to be a journey for us. Obviously, that's a big feature, but our first preview for that is to support a preview of that with Outlook data for on-premise Exchange servers. So we're super excited to get that out in preview this week at Ignite and announce that. Social gestures and mentions. So you'll have seen that in the recent builds of the Outlook client. You can now go and app mention somebody in your email and have that automatically provided as a filter in the UI. So we've got APIs for that. A bunch of you have told us that you really don't like all the tricky little dollars in our query language, so we've made all of those optional so you can clean up your queries a little bit. You can go and upload files to the maximum file size that OneDrive now supports through the APIs with large file upload, and a whole bunch of things in the Azure Active Directory space. Administrative units, so you can go and partition up your global Active Directory to suit your organizational structure. Invitation manager, so you can go and take guests who are outside of your tenant, bring them into your tenant with the right security. Privileged identity management lets you go and raise a user up just for a moment to go and do an administrative task without having to go and make people who shouldn't really be administrators. Identity protection is going to come along and tell you, hey, these are risky activities that are happening inside your tenant and give you warnings about them. And then application proxy lets you go and punch through the graph to applications deployed on-premise. And then it's not just what we're announcing this week. The graph is a whole rolling program of continuously adding new features. So in terms of a roadmap for what's coming soon over coming months, Well, we're going to be adding Delta queries for Outlook and Azure Active Directory. So you can go in with a single call, just go and say, hey, what's changed since last time I called? And that's a great pair with webhooks. So I get a webhook saying, hey, something has changed. And then I can just go and say, well, tell me what changed since the last time I got a webhook. And that's a really great way to add reliability to your event-driven programming. And then we're super excited that we'll be getting the Intune product onto the graph. I told you we were starting to move outside of that core office productivity space, and Intune is a really big play for us there to go and add that whole API onto the graph. So look out for that. And then reports for Office 365. So it'll be the first time we're starting to add some reporting functionality into the graph. So you can go and say, hey, what's going on in my tenant, and see what kind of usage of Office 365 is going on, and moving that all onto the graph. So whole bunch of new stuff announcing this week and coming over the months to come. So that's a lot of stuff, right? So we've got a lot of sessions at Ignite this time. I'm going to put this list up at the end so you didn't rush to take photos of it. But there's an awful lot of sessions, and there's also an awful lot of hands-on labs. So I'm not going to drill into too many of those new features. I'm just going to pick a couple of them and talk about them from the point of view of line of business, because there are individual sessions for all of them. And I want to focus the time we have together for the rest of the session on this particular aspect of working with the graph. And we don't often talk about it, really, but for an Ignite audience, I mean, I suspect a lot of you are you know, pretty heavily involved on a day-to-day basis in this exact space in terms of building line of business applications. And that build versus buy question is really, you know, at the heart of the IT department. It has been, you know, since there were IT departments, really, right? And the coming of SaaS applications as the sort of dominant force in the marketplace has made that question much more vexing. It's certainly not made it any easier for people deciding what to do. And so we want to work out what we can best do at Microsoft to help with that build versus buy dilemma. And the core thing for us, really, is being even-handed in taking cost out of both sides of the equation and adding richness to both sides of the equation. And obviously, SaaS is great stuff, and, you know, if you look around the agenda at Ignite, you know, a vast majority of it is us explaining our SaaS offerings. But for those of you where you've got an area that where build is the right choice, we want to make sure that we've got the right stuff to keep your costs down as well. So that's really where I'm going to focus for the rest of the session today. So I'm going to drill into a bunch of areas that I feel are like core to building your own line of business applications, and look at what the graph has to offer there. So I'm going to start with setup and configuration. So one of the things that's kind of different about building a line of business application is you've got a lot more control in terms of setting up your application than when you're building packaged or SaaS software. You know, you can go and choose exactly what groups you're setting up. You can decide whether you're relying on existing infrastructure and existing infrastructure of users and groups in your environment, or whether you're setting them up new with this application. You don't have to have that one-size-fits-all model. Whether you're creating Office 365 modern groups, whether you're creating DLs, all of that's pretty much under your control. You can fit it around your application and around the approach your IT department takes to managing these kinds of things. And the story today with this part of working with setting up a line of business application is it's kind of a hybrid. We're on a journey to moving all of this onto the Microsoft Graph, and we believe that'll really significantly reduce the cost of building this part of your application. But today, we've only got part of it there. So if you look at the new SharePoint stuff we're launching, we've got CRUD operations on SharePoint sites and lists, but actually going and making a brand new site in our preview isn't there yet, so you have to fall back to the existing CSOM APIs. And we'll get there. But why? You know, why are we actually trying to do that? You know, what's the motivating fact when clearly there is an API there to do it today? And so here's an example of provisioning the site with CSOM. And you can see CSOM's a great API. There's a huge amount of richness that's, you know, come from being around for a long time, right? I'm sure an awful lot of you are big CSOM heads, right? But there's quite a few calls here, and there's quite a lot of techie detail. And perhaps really I'm having to know a little bit more about SharePoint and look up a bit more detail than I'd really want to know just to go and say, hey, I want a basic site. You know, I don't really know which time zone 7 represents, for example, off the top of my head. And I don't really want to have to find out about user code maximum levels and storage maximum levels, right? It's just a little bit more than I wanted. And why have I got, you know, 4 lines of code to make one object? So let's compare and contrast that with the graph code for making a modern group. And a modern group's about a similar kind of complexity of object as a SharePoint site, maybe even a little more complex under the covers. And you can see this is a bit cleaner and more modern. And if we scale this up over all the things you have to do on the graph, then we're really taking some significant learning cost out. So here I'm just going and making a very simple group object. And everything that I'm putting in here is stuff that's actually in my concern. You actually want to care about whether the group is mail-enabled or not, and whether it's enabled for security, and what kind of group it is. And then just one simple call to go and actually make it. And you'll see this call, this last call here, this pattern over and over again today in the talk, where I'm saying graph service dot something dot request dot something async. And that's me using the .NET version of our graph SDK. And that's part of what's reducing the code here significantly. Obviously, when I'm making a REST call, I want some kind of wrapper, ideally, whether that's something handwritten in my code base or something from Microsoft. But we really like to think that the SDKs that we're putting out are cutting down the amount of code in your production apps very significantly. And we've had a .NET SDK and an Android SDK for a while now, and we're super excited that we're releasing client-side and server-side JavaScript SDKs here at Ignite this week, and plenty more to come over coming months. So we're going to have very broad platform coverage for our SDKs. And what we're doing here with this SDK, the request object is the interesting bit here, where we're actually saying, hey, I'm going to go and say with the group that I want to add something to, the request is really going to model the URL, and it's going to give me a type safe wrapper to say, hey, what are the things I can do on this URL? Obviously, if I've got a vanilla URL, I don't really know what I can do, which HTTP verbs I could use. And that request object is going to say, hey, well, on this particular one, I can support add and delete. So I can go and do a post or a delete from an HTTP point of view, or I can just do a get and an add, but no delete or something like that. So it gives me that extra wrapper. And if I'm an IntelliSense kind of person, it gives me the ability to just hit dot and see what I can do without having to fall back on the documentation. So let's see that code in action inside our property manager. Font size okay for everybody? Yeah? So, the add users and groups async is where we're in the middle of our provisioning code. So we've got a provisioning stage for this application where we're going and installing everything into the tenant and setting up the SharePoint sites and adding the groups. Because this is a demo, this is actually an app that's going to go and add a set of users. In, you know, real provisioning code, I might be going and finding existing groups or giving me ways to set up config files full of existing users, or go and search the directory for user groups that exist to go and pull those in. But I'm just pretty much making them. And I'm actually going to drive this from a little XML file. This is probably any XML file you'll see all week. It's a bit retro, isn't it? So I've just got a little file there with a list of the Active Directory groups. So I've got a group for my inspectors for property management and my repair people. And then I've got a set of users here, and you'll see these are the ones I'm picking up. And if they already existed, so I already existed in the directory, of course, then it'll just go and skip over making them and just join them into the right groups. So, back to my code. So I'm going to read my XML file and just pull that in with a little bit of XPath. I'm not going to focus on that. And then I'm going to go and find out if the group already exists, a little helper method. And then I'm going to go into actually adding the group and have a look at the helper method there. So this is my add group async. And you can see it is really just that simple code that I had on the PowerPoint. That wasn't PowerPoint coding. That was the actual code that I'm just newing up this group object, passing in those simple properties. And then I'm making that call where I where I did the request and calling the add async, and obviously in real code I'd have an exception handler that was a bit less embarrassing than that. But that's all there is to it, to go and add a group. So really, really super simple. And then the same for the user, really. So I'm reading the XML again then. And you can see here now I'm creating a user object. And this time there's a few more properties to a user. Obviously, a user is a bit more complicated object. And I can say whether I'm going to change the password and whether the user's forced to change the password, that kind of thing, and set up their job title, department. But again, just that same pattern of saying add the user async. Very, very simple code. So, I think all of us tend to focus on automating the high business value workflows when we're thinking about which projects are really going to give the top ROI. And a lot of that comes down to, you know, that cost ROI trade-off. And what we're hoping to be able to do with the graph is bring a lot of smaller projects over that line. So you can just very quickly, with these tiny, tiny amounts of code, say, yeah, now it's worth me automating some of these workflows that previously just weren't cost-effective to do anything about. And that should smooth out a whole bunch of things. We can all think of a whole bunch of things that are in our own organizations that are just, you know, in some document that you have to follow the steps, or at best on some wiki so they're at least kept a bit more up to date. But really being able to go and translate those internal processes with very small amounts of code and to go and, you know, say, hey, I know that I've got my enterprise resources, licenses is the example I've got here, that I'm going to go and assign, and that I'm going to say, well, I know that I've got, you know, these kind of infrastructure, and I can just pull it with just a couple of lines of code out of the graph, connect a few things together, then we can make a whole lot more sort of, you know, two afternoon projects feasible, if you like. So, you know, you imagine when I've got some workflow around closing a deal, that the thing I normally do, and it's completely manual, is go and set up some groups or a SharePoint site or something like that to work in for the team members who are going to work on the new project, having closed the deal, and set up some standard set of project plans and maybe go and copy them off a standard folder and just dump them in. And then set up some spreadsheets for people to do their time management for the new project. And when that's manual, of course, they always end up being done slightly differently every time you do it. And so it's just a little bit awkward, and, you know, people, you can't then easily go and report over those kind of things because they're not quite in the same shape. So being able to automate that super easily. Or new users. I mean, we've all got a situation, I'm sure everybody in the room has list somewhere of things that you're supposed to do when somebody new joins the team, whether it's at the group level or at the organization level. So you can imagine some HR professional maintaining a list in SharePoint of the things that need to be done to onboard somebody. And that's very easy to do, just sit with the master list. And then when anybody actually does get onboarded, going and pushing those tasks into Planner, perhaps sharing that with their manager. So then the manager can say, oh yes, how are you doing? How are you getting on with the week one tasks and the month one tasks? And, you know, are you on the payroll system yet? The really important stuff. And having all that be very smooth with, again, just a very small amount of code. So what sort of code would it look like to do some of these things? So go and read those beta things. So we're looking at our new preview SharePoint API here. And for our SharePoint API and any of our beta APIs, we don't actually provide SDKs for them. We only provide SDKs for the generally available things at the moment. So if you're dipping your toes in the water of our beta APIs, you will have to get the toes just a little bit more wet and dive down to the rest level. And you'll see that in my code in a minute. So I'm talking about these from a REST point of view. So I go into the beta endpoint of the graph, and we've got a sites collection there. And then I need to just specify a site ID. I can go and find that site ID by using a standard SharePoint path that I'm used to working with, a slash-based path. And I'll show you how to do that in a minute. And then once I've got a site, every SharePoint site has a set of lists on it, as you're used to with SharePoint. So I'm going to enumerate those and get a list ID. And then I'm going to get the set of items in the list and just pull that data back. And I'm going to take advantage here of one of the more powerful things in the graph and say, hey, I'm going to expand the column set. So the column set on a SharePoint item is the actual raw data. So we separate the metadata for a list item in SharePoint that's the same for every kind of list item from the column set, which is different from one list to another. So if I've set up a list that's got here, you can see that where I've bolded them at the bottom. Hopefully you can see the bolding. Title and description is the two... as the two fields, then the column set will be different and it'll have title and description as JSON fields. But the metadata at the top in the list items will be the same. But I can get that in a single round trip. And then maybe I want to go and set up that planner data. So I can just do that very easily. I can go and create a new plan. And again, I'm working on the beta endpoint here. Planner's on the beta endpoint at the moment. And I go and say, hey, I'll just post. And literally, I only need these two fields to go and create a new plan. I need to say what the title of the plan is, and I need to say which group it's contained in. So plans live in Office 365 groups. So I need the ID of that group. And you remember we went and made a group earlier with those simple lines of code? The response packet for that, when it came back, would have had an ID in it. So I just stuff that ID in here and go and post and make a plan. And then buckets are the columns that I put tasks in. If you think about dragging tasks from unstarted to in progress to completed, that's a bucket. So I'm going to want to make some of those, and maybe I've got an urgent that I go and put in the initial unstarted things like, you know, get on the payroll system, because getting paid is kind of important when you start, right? And I'll just pass back in the plan ID that I get returned back from that first call. So I'll just cascade those calls. Or then updating the timesheet data through Excel. So Excel is another example of us bridging across cloud services. I'm going to make an API call to the graph, and the first part of that API call at the very top of the slide there is to the OneDrive service. So I'm going to go to Me Drive to go to a OneDrive, or maybe to the OneDrive associated with the modern group, where I'd say group/ID/drive, and then get the items. And I pick the ID from the items, maybe from a picker, or maybe from having gone and just created those and stamped out those new timesheets into my project. When I created them, I'd get a new ID. But then because I know they're Excel files, I can go and drill in and add workbook/worksheets on the end and bridge across into the Excel API across the graph, using the power of the graph, and get back a list of the worksheets inside the file to program against. And one of them, in the second line, is the time worksheet. And I can just go and patch that to go and amend the data to update the timesheet data for my project. And you can see it's just passing in the standard Excel range notation, A2 to C2. We've all used that in Excel. And there's a whole bunch of things I can pass through to this patch to go and change the data. I've just pulled out here the actual values, the raw values of the data, and what the types of those data. But I could go and set the fancy formatting in Excel or the calculation formulas, all of that sort of thing. But all super easy to be able to just do with this single patch call. So let's focus on that new user provisioning scenario and go and actually do that for real in some code. So what I'm going to do here is, obviously, I don't have an HR system. I've got my property manager sample. So I've gone and added the scenario into the property manager system, and I'll go and upload this sometime over the next few weeks to GitHub to the existing property manager. But if you can imagine the idea that the new user has been added in the organization, so they've just been added into the Active Directory. So if we go and look at the Active Directory with all of the users that we had, and I've got a new user, Boaty McBoatface, who's been added in. That might be a British person laughing over there. If you want to know anything about British people and the British personality, go and Bing for Boaty McBoatface. I promise you it's work safe. You'll learn something about British people, maybe more than you want. So here's my new user. And you can see that he's not got any groups assigned or any licenses. He's just pretty much a vanilla user, maybe on day one. But he's going to be a new inspector in our organization. So So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have that scenario that I was talking about, where I've got a list in SharePoint of tasks that a new user should do. And in my scenario, what I've decided is that the easiest thing for new inspectors to do will be to work together on their new tasks, because then they can mentor each other and help each other over that first month, and all just, you know, there'll be hopefully enough new people coming in that the ones who've just gone through new hire can help the people who are coming in next month, assuming we're just hiring every month, because that's awesome, right? So I've just set that up in SharePoint, and I've got a title and description, so just a simple two-column list here with a couple of, you know, important things like set up the payroll and go and get a cell phone so I can go out into the field and do inspections and attend my Inspector 101 training that I'm going to have to do in the first couple of weeks. And then I've gone and created a group here called Getting Started that I'm going to collate all those new users in. And I've put a plan in there with just a few buckets for unstarted, in progress, and complete, where they're all going to sit together and they're going to work on their tasks together as they go through new hire. Okay. So what does the code for that look like? If I actually go and, excuse me, click on the Add Inspector button. Please don't critique my UI design too much. I don't think that's really a great place for the Add Inspector button in the UI. And what I've got here is a list of all of the users who aren't already an inspector. So I just went to the graph and said, hey, give me all of the users, and then give me all of the inspectors, and subtracted one from the other and populated this list. Probably not the most efficient thing in the world. So I'm going to go and choose Boaty and say submit, and then go and hit a breakpoint in my code here. So the first thing I'm going to do is go and pull out a bunch of things that I need, some primitives to work with. So I'm going to go and make my SDK object, my graph service, and then I'm going to get the user object that represents Boaty. Excuse me, I'm afraid I'm going to cough. And a couple of group objects. I'm going to have a group for inspectors. Obviously, I'm going to want to add Boaty to the inspectors group when we're done with all the work. And that getting started group we looked at. So I'm just going to go and make simple get calls on the graph for that. And then I'm going to go and want to go and find that getting started plan that I made. And I'm going to go and want to find the unstarted bucket, so the leftmost bucket in the plan. So those are super simple, just get calls against the graph. And then I'm going to do the first kind of really interesting call here. I'm going to add Boaty to the getting started group. So it's a little more interesting call with groups to go and add a member. So you remember we normally go and just say, hey, get the URL and do a request and then say add async. But what we're doing here, you'll see there's this extra references term in here. So when we add a member to a group, groups don't actually own their members. So their members just are free floating in the directory. But the members are actually referenced by the group. So we're actually going to add them to the references collection of the members. So one more extra term in there. But still, as you can see, just a one-liner to go and do that. So we're going to add Boaty there. And then the next thing we're going to go and do is go and pull in that SharePoint list to use that as a template for creating our planner tasks. So what I'm going to need to do is find the site ID for the SharePoint list first. So I know my path to my SharePoint site. It's the not terribly imaginatively named suite level app demo, but that's the standard SharePoint path. So I'm going to go and call that. And if I just go into that helper method, you can see that here I've not got that simple one-line code because this is a beta API, so I don't have the SDK to just get it down to one line while the API is still in beta. You can actually go and generate your own SDKs, because all of the technology we use for creating the SDKs is open sourced, so you can just go and pull it down and point it at the metadata and generate your own. But I'm not going to step through the fine details of this. I'm sure most of you know how to make an HTTP call with the .NET stack or whatever stack you work on. But the interesting bit that I am going to look at is just the actual URL that we're calling and what comes back from the call. So here you can see that we're going into the SharePoint node. And then there's this interesting little colon operator. So what's that all about? So the colon operator actually lets me flip from standard graph syntax, where I'm doing slash separated collections and IDs, which is kind of the normal way we address things on the graph, to then saying, hey, no, I actually want to flip into the slashes, meaning traditional paths, either in OneDrive or in SharePoint. So whenever you see those colons, I'm flipping from those two kinds of syntaxes, and I can mix and match those in a graph call for OneDrive or SharePoint. So just run that until it's returned. And you can see I've got my site object back with a simple, and this is just a little POCO that I created to deserialize the return value that I wrote myself. And you can see I've got the typical things that I find from the site. So I've got the full URL of the SharePoint site there. And most importantly, I've got the ID that I'm going to need to pass into my next call there. So I've got this big, long, horrible ID. Okay. So now I've got my site ID. I can actually go and get the list items. And this one's pretty cool. This really shows the that depth of power of the graph. So I'm going to call in and say, get list items from site list. That's my next helper. And I'm passing in my new hire task. So that's the, sorry about that. That's the name of my list that I created inside that SharePoint site that you saw with those half a dozen or so template tasks. So if I drop into there, again, I'm not going to step through the actual HTTP, but let's have a look at the call. So I'm calling into SharePoint again and the site's collection. I've got that site ID that I picked up from the last call. And I'm saying, hey, get me the lists. Well, okay, that would get me all of the lists. I don't want all of the lists. I just want the one with the name that I specified. So I'm going to use a filter expression. So a filter expression is how I do essentially a where clause on the graph. So I'm passing in filter, and I'm saying the filter equals, and it's a bit hard to see with the URL encoding with the %20s, but I'm basically saying filter is name equals, and then new lists it. And so that gets me down to the one list that I'm interested in, but that would still just get me the list. What I wanted was the items in the list, and actually I wanted that column set data. If you remember, the column set gives me the actual specific data for the user-created columns, in my case, title and description that I wanted. And you might think, well, I've got to get the list, and then I've got to get the items, and then I've got the column data, and that's three round trips, which in a web application is kind of no great shapes. But if this was a mobile application, three round trips is a bit of a downer, right? We don't really want to be having that kind of slow UI. So I'm going to take advantage of the power of the graph, and I'm going to use that expand and say, hey, all in one round trip, I want to get the whole lot, please. So I'm going to say expand the items. So when I get the list, I'm going to get the list with its items. And I can actually, in this case, and you can't do this everywhere in the graph, but there's a bunch of places where you can do it, so it's well worth experimenting to see if you can get your round trips cut down. I'm actually going to nest another expand inside parentheses and say, hey, I'd like the items, and inside each item, I'd like to pull in the column set, please. So a two-level expand to pull it all in a single round trip. So pretty neat. So let's let that run down to the breakpoint. You can see it's a bit longer call there because we are pulling back all that data. But if we were going over the internet from a mobile app, I'd rather trade that as a single round trip. So let's have a look at the payload there that's coming back. And you see, yeah, I've pulled back a heck of a lot of the stuff there, all just in one call by doing that two-level expand. All right, so I'm going to deserialize that into some prettier objects that we can actually take a look at. Again, I just created some POCOs to deserialize that. And so I've got a bunch of list items now that look just exactly like those SharePoint lists that I was looking at. So I've got my setup one-to-one, so a couple of columns. Okay, so I'm just going to loop over that, and I'm going to go and make a planner task for each one. So the planner tasks are super easy to make. You saw me just posting those couple of fields, so I'm not going to go into, you know, extensive detail on those. Other than to say, look, I'm just going to go and make a couple of fields for each. I'm going to pass in the title. The interesting thing about planner is that if I want to create the title and the details for a planner task, the way planner models that is actually to say that details can be a bunch of complicated things. It can be text, or it can be a list, or it can be a whole bunch of stuff. And so it's modeled as a second level object. So I actually do need to go and make two calls for planner. So you'll see that I'm creating the initial task with its title, and then I'm going to go and do a patch to go and update it, having created it, and set in this details sub object. And in this case, I'm going to set that details object just as another piece of text with a description. So I'm going to run that again and whiz through that list and make all of those tasks. Okay. So what's the next thing? So given that my user now has got his tasks, I want him to have the licenses that he needs to be able to do his job. He's just been brought into the organization. He hasn't been set up with Office or Intune or any of the things that he's going to need to do. So we can do that through the graph as well. And again, now I'm back into release territory, so I can just use my simple SDK calls, even though this is actually some quite complex logic, it's just a few lines of code. So I want to actually say, hey, I'll give him a license for everything that we've got a license to corporately, which, you know, perhaps is a bit unrealistic, but it gives you a sense of how we can actually work through these on the graph. So I'm going to go and find all of the things that are available on the graph, all of the products that are available, and I'm going to loop through them. And if they're enabled in my tenant, then I'm going to say, well, have I got a license available to give him? Obviously, there's no point trying to assign a license if we don't have any that we've paid for. So I'm going to say, as long as the prepaid license units are more than the amount that we've consumed, then go and actually assign a nice new license. And that's the same call that I would use if I wanted to unassign a license as well. I'd just pass in the GUID of the licenses I wanted to unassign. So we'll let that run. And then finally, he's now ready to go into the inspectors group and be ready for active duty. So again, another call to go and add to the to a group. And so it's that same member reference call that we made earlier to add him to the new users group. Okay. So that looks like that's worked. Let's see what's actually happened. So if we go and now refresh this in... in the AAD admin page. You can see he's now got Office and Intune licenses added, and he's in the Getting Started Inspectors group. And if we go and look at our planner, then you see there's a whole bunch of tasks have appeared, all of which are assigned to Boaty and have got that description. So everything's just worked nicely. And we've made that simple workflow. And really, you know, that's what, about 15 lines of code to do all of that total, and it would be a lot less once those things have gone GA and we can just use SDKs for them. So really easy to do that kind of simple workflow on the graph. So that workflow really only depended, in terms of existing data, on one SharePoint list. Everything else, it just set up as it went along. And that's perhaps, you know, a little bit unusual. If you think about what many processes rely on, they rely on much more corporate data being in place to be able to actually work. But how aware are we of the quality of the corporate data when we're building those line of business apps? It's not always the case that our corporate data is perfect. In fact, far from it, to be honest. That's our experience and our partner's experience, particularly in terms of Active Directory. And increasingly what we find is that the quality of data in your Active Directory can be a gating factor to how well you can actually build your applications, particularly on the graph and when you're deploying things like Delve. So you can use the graph to go and essentially sample the quality of that data, go and browse through your Active Directory data and say, hey, well, what's going on here? You know, have I got the kind of data I would expect in my Active Directory? You know, do people have the right phone numbers? Do they have the right relationships to their managers? Do they all have photos? So when actually I try and bring up a rich portal like the one I showed you with Property Manager, then actually the thing that shows up is going to be rich and it's going to work well, as opposed to just falling on its face because half the data is missing that it's relying on. And typically, often, we have great data in our IT departments, but then the further out we go into our organizations, the sort of quality of that can fade outwards. So using Microsoft Graph to go in, and the Active Directory component of Microsoft Graph to go and check where you are on that, and then perhaps, you know, pull in better quality data from a source like an HR application and synchronize that in via Microsoft Graph to bring that quality up to then let our applications run well. And of course, you're going to want to code defensively because, you know, you're going to miss some, there's going to be spots, but that's kind of just, you know, hopefully teaching you to suck eggs. So we've got a partner that I want to talk about for a few minutes who's really leveraged Microsoft Graph to turn this into a product line. So Hyperfish is a startup that has that believes that that high-quality data is really a key success factor, both to deploying Office 365 and the richness of Office 365 with, as I say, things like Delve, and to building your own enterprise apps. And they took a bet on the Microsoft Graph as though the way they were going to realize that because of the richness of the data that we provide and the ease of building. I think there's a really nice quote here that they believe that the graph really saved them months in terms of time to market. And using the previous API layers, they'd have been an awful lot slower. So super excited that they were able to make that kind of bet and to be able to get to where they wanted to be. But the proof really is looking at some data. And they tell us that that even numbers like this that look a bit scary are actually quite a good Active Directory. So this is a piece of their UI where they're assessing and analyzing an Active Directory and giving a report back that's available in their free version or their paid version. You can see that there's a whole bunch of things that are missing here, kinds of data from the Active Directory. And I want to draw your attention particularly to the bottom left corner, 3% manager and reports. So you can totally imagine excitedly going off and implementing an app where I say, hey, I've got this awesome new idea and this awesome new resource on the graph where I say, hey, somebody's on vacation because I can go and see that they're on vacation because Outlook tells me they've got their out-of-office set through the graph. Awesome, I know they're on vacation. So when some workflow goes off now, I can escalate it to their manager because I know they're on vacation and it just all happens magically and I don't have to have things break down when people are there. Not if I don't know whose manager somebody is. It's just not going to work, right? So we've actually got to take a bet on up-leveling that, the quality of that information. So in the pro version of Hyperfish, they have the ability to go and actually fix the data, not just analyze it. And so they send out emails, for example, to go and say, hey, would you mind, you know, we've found that this data is missing for you, would you mind updating it? And that's great, right? You know, you can imagine getting that email, but I can also imagine getting that email and it not really being a super high priority email, right? So they've got to make that as easy as possible. And you can see in the middle here, hopefully you can read that, it's a bit faint in that gray, isn't it? That they've again leaned on the power of the graph. So they've gone and said, well, where are the sort of places in the graph that we might find people's phone numbers? That not just, you know, if the phone number is missing. And they've said, hey, we found it in your Outlook signature. So I don't actually have to bother going and tediously typing my phone. All I do is go, yep, that's me. It's my phone number, click yes, and that field's done with. So this kind of power of saying, hey, well, I can just walk around and pull together some intelligence has really made things a lot easier and made that flow for them much more simple. So whether you're using that kind of Power App or just synchronizing an HR database, I think it's a really important thing as you're building line of business applications against the graph. Think about, hey, am I going to actually have the data throughout the whole of my my user base to be able to make it work? So it's not just the data in my organization that I can exploit or rely on. I can rely on my organizational choices when I'm building a line of business app. So a lot of the times today when we're building applications, we're trying to get away from too much very deep custom code. And we're trying to use simpler technologies where we're perhaps clicking together connectors, more Lego-like building blocks. We're hooking some webhooks, putting a connector on, saying, hey, an event from this system connects into this one. It's just a simple flow. And that's awesome for productivity, right? But it's perhaps not going to give us the richest experiences in all cases. And so being able to pull in some of that data through the graph that's a little bit deeper, perhaps, into an application can really make a big difference, we believe, in terms of the costs for rolling out an application across your org. So let me give you an example. If you think about, in our property manager case, I'm creating all of those groups. And if with that group, I'm then saying, through enterprise mobility management, I'd like to roll out to my to my guy who's getting a cell phone to go and take photos in properties. I'd like to go and roll out the application that I want him to go and use to do that, the Contoso property inspector application, onto his corporate issued phone. Well, I'd have to go in and use my EMM software to do that. But if I go and integrate that into my line of business app, well, I can take that whole layer of training out, obviously. So I've swapped doing some integration work for some training costs, or maybe the costs of actually having to hand over that workflow process to somebody else to say, hey, would you go and provision that into the group? So it's a good trade-off there. And it lets you tune the app really for what matters to your organization and where you're cost sensitive. And obviously, you'd want to do that from a loose coupling point of view. I mean, if you went and connected everything to everything and made all your technology choices coupled through your LOB apps, then you know, you'd have one big rat's nest and a big ball of mud architecture. So we wouldn't want you to go and use the graph as just this one Uber connection point. You still want to go and use whatever your standard enterprise connectivity tool set that you would use for plugging systems together, but then use the graph underneath that and connect them together, so you're using a standard set of tools to plug them together. So how might that look if I was going to do that with Intune? So as I said, we're going to be bringing Intune to the graph really soon. And obviously, soon means don't hold me to this exact JSON. But in terms of our internal systems that we're playing with, this is what it looks like today. So the first thing I'm going to want to do is build a catalogue of applications that Intune understands that I could go and deploy. So I'm going to go and post a set of mobile applications that I can push out to my users. Now, here I'm pushing an iOS application. I could be doing any platform, whether it's Android or Windows. And I could just go and get this data that I need to set up an application from the App Store of my choice. I can go and use Apple's APIs to pull it down from the App Store and then just push it through. And I'll just go and provision a whole bunch of these ahead of time. And then I'm going to push that out to the group. And it's very much like that assignment of a user to a group, but in reverse. I'm pushing the application to a group. And it's quite typical to push an application to multiple groups at once. So in this case, we're shaping the API in an array shape. I'm pushing that out, and you can see I'm sending the mobile app an update app assignment request. I'm posting that. And I'm saying, here's the group. And again, it's passing in that group ID that I want to set it to. And then I'm saying either it's required for everybody in the group, or it could be optional as well. So pretty easy stuff. Now, if you think about the people who are doing this, assigning those things to the group is a natural thing for me to include in my line of business application. But building that app catalog, that's not really something that ties itself to any one line of business application. And really, that's more of an IT administrator thing, right? It's not an end user goal, perhaps. And that's really one of the nice things about the fact that all of this technology is just built on simple REST, is that it's absolutely just as easy for me to call this stuff from script and target it at an IT administrator as it is to have it in my application. So here I've got a chunk of PowerShell. It could equally have been some Bash or whatever your scripting environment of choice is. And I'm just going to go and do exactly what I said. So I'm going to go and call the Apple iTunes API. And you can see what I'm doing here is I'm saying, hey, go and pull in everything which is from Microsoft Corporation. So what this script's going to do is going to actually go and gather up all of the Microsoft applications, so all of the Office suite primarily that we ship on iOS. And it's going to go and add those to my catalog. So I'm just going to call the standard invoke REST method to do that. Super easy. And then I'm just going to loop through them. I'm going to go and pull down the icons, because I need the actual raw data for the icons to pass in, to go and pull that from Apple, and then upload that into Intune. And I've got to do a little bit of logic here, depending on what icon sizes are available. So just a little bit of tweaky code there to say, hey, can I get the ones of the right size? And then I'll just make a little PowerShell object with those same fields that you saw me posting back earlier in the PowerPoint. So I'm going to say, hey, here's my display and publisher and which device types I'm targeting. and which versions of the software that I'm going to, which versions of the operating system I'm going to target. And because PowerShell can then just transform that very easily to JSON, it's again just a one-liner to go and push that through to the graph. So super, super simple. And then we're using exactly the same technology, whether we're building solutions for the IT administrator or for my end users actually in my UI of my line of business applications. Very, very easy. So, one final area that I wanted to talk about was pushing some of the data from your line of business application right into Microsoft Cloud Services via the graph. So why would I want to do this? Well, it's quite often the case that my users might be walking up to my line of business application, walking up to my web app or using my mobile app that I've built. Or they might be coming in, equally so, just from a standard Office application. So they might be walking up to Outlook, for example, and just, you know, if I've got my own CRM application or, you know, Salesflow application or something along those lines, I could walk up to that. Or I could walk up to a contact that had been created by that in Outlook and be starting looking at the contact and say, hey, I was talking to Bob last week, so I'll look at this contact for Bob. And I'd really like to drill back through from that contact straight through into my CRM system that I've got, or my sales pipeline system. And being able to do that smoothly and easily is really helped by having the links back into your system actually embedded right there in Outlook. And especially if you've built an add-in for Outlook, then I can rely on that data that's in Outlook to hook back through to my system. And the other thing, reason I might want to do this, is that that data in Outlook, the IDs actually sometimes change. A couple of our cloud systems, the IDs, if you take certain administrative actions or move mailboxes around, the IDs can change. And so to have to go and patch those up, it can be super, super advantageous to have your corporate IDs embedded in Exchange. So when the Exchange IDs change, then I can go and just do a reverse lookup and pick it up from your IDs and reconnect that data when some major, you know, earthquake-like administrative changes has happened to move things around. So, how would I do this? It turns out it's really, really simple. So we've just GA'd this for the Outlook data type. So here's an example of where I might use it to bring it that concrete. So Boomerang's an add-in that I use in Outlook all the time. And it's just actually an Outlook from the Office store. And it gives me a personal workflow. So that personal workflow lets me go and say, hey, I'd like to push I'd like to push an email out by a month, or push it out if nobody's replied, ping me back in a month, something like that. So super useful in terms of being able to let me manage the amount of email I get every day. But you can completely imagine that Boomerang's got some database in the back end, and being able to, if I go in through Boomerang to say, hey, I'd like to go and drill through to Outlook, but if I go in through Outlook, just go and pick up the data items in Boomerang. Well, being able to make that join by having the data stored in both ends would be super useful if I was trying to build something else myself. I've actually no idea if Boomerang uses this technology. I just plucked it as the example that I could relate. So today, as I say, we're supporting this on Outlook entities on the Microsoft Graph as our first release, and we've GA'd that this week. But over the next year or so, we'll be gradually shipping that across all of the data workloads in the graph. So you can go and extend anything that you find on the Microsoft Graph using the same techniques that I'm about to show you. So how do I do it? Very, very easy. I have an extensions collection on everything that I'll find in Outlook, so whether that's contacts or messages or folders or calendars. And I just go and post my data to it. So the first thing I've got to do is choose a name so I can go and keep my data separate from other people's data, because obviously if I've got two systems, then they might be competing for the same extension space. So I need to essentially namespace them. And what we recommend is to use a standard reverse DNS style of naming. So you can see I've chosen for the extension name here, com.contoso.opportunitymanager. Or I've got a reverse DNS for some hypothetical CRM system that I'm making for Contoso. And then I've just posted to that and sold it to use an OpenType extension on the extensions collection on my contact. And then I've added two properties, my company name and my URL. And then when I want to get that data back, it's really very, very simple indeed. I just use that extension name as the key into the extensions collection. And I'll just get those two properties back in the response. I'll just get a simple JSON packet with company name and URL. So drop dead simple to go and put a link back to your data in there. Okay. So hopefully I've given you the impression that, we really still strongly believe that there's value on both ends of that build versus buy trade-off. And that we're working to make sure that there's great facilities on the graph for people who are on the build side of the equation, as well as the buy. So obviously you would expect the graph to enable access to all of your enterprise data. I mean, that's fundamentally what it does, right? It gives you that API onto your SaaS data sources from Microsoft. But I've hopefully made a good case that it's a great way for you to actually tune an application to be a better fit within your organization. So whether that's connecting through to your corporate data sources, your SharePoint list that are pre-existing, or whether it's enabling your workflows and pushing together new assets that you would typically make by hand. All of those things can just, as I said, bring very, very small workflows above that ROI bar because of the fact that the number of lines of code to just do these things on the graph now is super simple. There's very little learning. So they've just become, you know, things you can fit into the odd afternoon and just get deployed really, really quickly. So, if that has whetted your appetite, hopefully now you're going to completely change your Ignite calendar, delete any sessions from that nice app that are not to do with the graph, and just fill it up with all of these instead, right? Have you a promise? Yeah? Yeah? Awesome. Thank you. So I'll leave that up there for a second.